Up next, it's episode number 100 of the Handy Guys podcast.
Welcome to the Handy Guys podcast, where we work together to complete that honey-do list, featuring answers to your questions and head-to-head tool challenges. Let's get started with the show with the Handy Guys themselves, Brian and Paul.
Okay, Brian, can you believe it? We've actually reached 100 episodes.
Wow.
Awesome.
Of our little podcast here in Internetville land.
Internetville? Is that like Farmville?
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't do Farmville. But anyway, we are the Handy Guys. You can find us on Facebook. Isn't that where they do Farmville? You can find us on our website, www.handyguyspodcast.com. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Zune. Hopefully, you'll be able to find us on TV soon. We're going to be coming out with some videos. You'll find us right at our website. And you know what? You can also find us by emailing us at us@handyguyspodcast.com. If you have a question, you can email us right there, right, Brian?
That's right. Or fill out the contact form.
And their contact form is right on our website. You can also find out what tools we recommend, what products, right on the Handy Guys Podcast store.
That's right. So you can just click on our store, and we've got some of our favorite recommendations right there on that page.
Okay, but in this episode of the Handy Guys podcast, Brian, we are going to reminisce about some of our favorite episodes. And in addition, you said that we're going to have a special guest, but I'm not really sure who it is. So we might have a special guest call in. It's going to be a surprise. We'll find out when it comes, but I think you set something
up.
Yes,
I did.
I don't really know who it is, but it's somebody, sort of an internet celebrity of sorts.
That's right.
Okay, so we might have a special guest, and so you're going to have to stay tuned in if you want to catch that part of our episode. But initially, we're going to talk about our favorite episodes right after this.
You are listening to the Handy Guys Podcast.
Awesome.
Okay, Brian.
Hey, Paul, before you go any further, you didn't mention Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
We have Twitter as well.
We're at Handy Guys.
We're at Handy Guys on Twitter. Okay. Yeah. So, Paul, looking back over the past about 2 years and 99 previous episodes, what was your favorite episode?
Well, it's hard for me to think of a favorite because there have been so many that I thought were good, some I thought were bad. And sometimes our listeners disagreed with my opinions right. on those or what was good and what wasn't. So it's kind of difficult. But I would have to say that one night, I thought, you know, I've got a problem with my dishwasher. I need to fix it. I'm a handy guy. We shouldn't be having these dishes that aren't getting cleaned. So I did some research, didn't really find the answer I wanted, so I started digging in myself. I figured out the solution kind of on my own. The internet, believe it or not, Brian, if you have a dishwasher problem, the internet, I've been amazed, is not very helpful. If you start Googling for internet repairs, it takes you to all these weird sites where they're like trying to just sell they're like these, I don't even know what to call them. They're just sites loaded up with Google ads that don't really have very good information.
Yeah, there's a lot of those kind of weird sites. And, you know, some of those have even been sucking in some Handy Guys content lately. And they're really annoying.
So anyway, I decided to make a quick video one night. It's kind of embarrassing. It's one of my first videos. I set up a camera myself. And just started talking to it, and I used a cheap camera at the time, one of these cheap flip cameras, and with bad audio, and made a video, and it wasn't very good, but I figured it was a start.
Hi, this is Paul with the Handy Guys Podcast, and today I want to talk to you about a problem I've been having with my dishwasher. And one of the problems I've been having is that I've been getting a white film on all of the glasses.
And amazingly, that video is becoming a little bit of a sensation on our website.
Right.
People are just continue to watch it. We're getting some nice compliments. And I'm a little embarrassed because now that we've done some more video and have done better video.
Right, in high definition and all that kind of stuff.
I'm kind of embarrassed that one is getting so much attention. And I keep saying we're going to redo it, and I am going to redo it. and haven't gotten around to it. But the key was, and I think that what's made it successful is a lot of people are having the same problem that I was having with my Kenmore Elite dishwasher, which is actually a Whirlpool dishwasher, which is also a KitchenAid dishwasher.
Right.
And what I hope people understand is if you have any of the newer models of those three brands, you have the same innards as mine. So I'm going to be making
innards? Is that a technical term?
Yeah, I think so. And in fact, get this, Brian. Yeah. To take it even a step further, I was down at my in-laws for the holidays. They were having some of the same problems I was having. They have a KitchenAid dishwasher. And guess what? I took it apart for them. And I did it so fast, they were saying, man, it looks like you've done a lot of work on these dishwashers. But it was just that I had taken mine apart so many times. I did it about three straight times for the video just so I could capture each part. And anyway, it was just kind of funny. But truly, indeed, and I took some pictures of it. So we have some pictures of other dishwashers that look a little different. They have the brackets are a little different for the upper trays, and they come off a little differently. But once you get into the basin, exactly the same.
Yep. So that's pretty amazing that they, you know, kind of follow a tried and true design, I guess, that tried and true doesn't get your dishes clean.
Right. And it's, you know, the old-fashioned GE dishwashers that existed for 30 years, clean as well as anything. They just use more power and water than what some folks would like to see. And it's unfortunate. It's, you know, some of the products that are coming out today that are greener, that use less water and power, sacrifice cleaning ability. And they require some a little bit more maintenance. And I've found more and more, like with the model I have, that, and I've talked to other people that had the same problem of it not cleaning, is that the repair guys say, oh, it's nothing. You just need to try a different detergent or whatever. They just brush it off because they either don't know the answer or aren't willing to deal with it. And you have to kind of dig in yourself and fix these problems. So,
yep.
So the dishwasher's one. What about you? What's one of your favorite episodes?
Well, you know, one that comes to mind recently, you know, we've had a lot of snow. We've had two-foot dumps of snow, you know, within 1 week. We're getting another maybe 8 inches tomorrow. So
yeah, we have 4 feet of snow on the ground. That's not Philadelphia
normal
weather.
No. So, you know, last year about this time, we did a show about snowblowers, and we interviewed Wendy Bounds from Wall Street Journal.
Thanks, Wendy.
Yeah, thank you, Wendy. And Wendy had done a video on comparing different kinds of snowblowers. So we talked to her about the choices that she made, what she liked, what she didn't like.
What do you think is the most important decision criteria when picking one? You know, you mentioned small electrics to the big behemoth and a few in between. How does someone decide? What's the most important factor in deciding what kind of snowblower to get?
Well, I think I would say first off, just to decide if a snowblower in general is for you. I mean, if you you know, if you don't have a lot of time and you really do need to, you don't have time to sit in your driveway and do this, or you want to spend time with your kids on the weekend, it might be worth, you know, still having the plow. On the other hand, if you got to get out of your driveway and you don't have time to wait, it can be a very good option, particularly if you have a smaller driveway. After you made that decision, I'd say the first thing is take into account what kind of driveway you have and just how much space you have to clear. They range from, as you guys probably know, these single-stage models, which can do smaller driveways and work well on paved driveways. They're not quite as powerful as the next stage up, these dual-stage models, but they can work very well for people who don't have a lot of space to clear. However, if you're living in the Northeast and you get a lot of snow or out in the Midwest and you get dumped on a lot, you really are going to have to look at some of these more powerful models. And, you know, from my experience, I would just say I would err on the side.
Down the road, maybe we will do similar type content when we go to more video content. But I thought she did an excellent job. And, you know, I have a snowblower story, Paul. You know a little bit about this. I picked up my first snowblower, and it was a lemon out of the box right before we had a 2 foot dump of snow.
There was a reason why the big box store that you're at had one snowblower left.
You know, they had six when I walked into the store.
Oh, okay.
And when I bought it, it was the last one.
Is that right?
And it was still in the box from the factory.
Huh.
And it was missing a part inside the carburetor. I spent 3 hours pulling that apart to figure out where the problem was.
Well.
And so I guess it was meant to be that I was not to have a snowblower. I returned it that night and got my money back. So I was a little disappointed. But so that had me thinking about snowblowers and about Wendy's article. And I think the snowblower that I did buy, if I would have been able to keep it, I think I would have liked it, and it would have fallen in line well with her recommendations on what did a good job.
Well, another episode that I enjoyed was we had a couple that surrounded mowers, and one of them was when we did a video that turned out pretty well on comparing a zero turn radius yard mower versus riding mower versus a typical tractor yard mower. And but
that was a lot of fun recording the video segments for that.
Yeah, that was fun. And you have a great field behind your house for us to do all that testing. But what I really kind of have good memories of is when we went out to your garage, when we used to have a lot more garage time, and perhaps we'll do some more of that with video, but where we did some, you know, sharpening of blades, some replacing of spark plugs. And my favorite moment was when I gave you my... let's see, I have a blade for mulching, a mulching blade.
The mower blade, sure.
So it's a little, it's not a typical mower blade though. It's got some more angles, and I wasn't real sure if you could sharpen it. And you were like, no problem. You did it. And we got some great photographs of that because we thought we'd turn off the lights or at least turn the lights down and get all those sparks flying.
Yeah, that was pretty neat. That's a cool picture out on the website.
That's on our promo. I think we got that in our promo video, which you can find right on our website.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. And so, you know, maybe that'll be another video we'll have come springtime, is actually showing the sharpening of the blade. Instead of talking about it and a couple of photographs and a description in the show notes on how to sharpen your mower blade, we'll actually have a video demonstration of that.
The other thing, yeah, and we absolutely, because it's very doable. And the other thing is that was very interesting to me was how we did some tool tests and found that, for instance, with, say, a hammer drill, that it's not necessarily how much you spend. You could have the most expensive drill in the world, but more than likely, for instance, in our case, you were paying for convenience for a wireless high-end cordless hammer drill. Wireless, cordless.
Right.
Always thinking computer world. But it was a cordless, whereas the cheaper corded model worked much better. It just didn't have the convenience of being cordless.
Right, because it was it had a faster RPM and a faster beats per minute on the hammering action than the cordless one. So the specs were a little better for actually drilling into concrete in the hammer drill mode.
And what was really funny is when we could take the 50-year-old corded, this is just traditional drills we were looking at.
Right.
We could take a 50-year-old Craftsman and go head-to-head with a modern cordless, and it would hold up pretty well.
Yeah, that was a fun one. Back when we did it, we called that show Drill It. It was one of our early episodes. And yeah, that was a lot of fun to do that. And we did some on circular saws. We never actually produced those. So maybe we'll have to revisit that as well.
Yeah, you're right. The audio is somewhere.
We have some audio somewhere recorded.
Well, we may have to redo that one.
Right. And, you know, we did the same thing with Sawzalls, if you recall. We said, you know what? When is it a good idea to get a cordless reciprocating saw? And how does that stack up against a traditional, you know, reciprocating saw with a tail, so to speak, with a power cord? And can they do the same job? And we concluded, no, they can't. You have the convenience of the cordless, but you're going to get the power in the corded. So that was another a fun episode to do.
Hey, we got a call coming in right now. Let's see who it is.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, who's this?
Who is this? This is Mark Spagnolo.
Hey Mark, how you doing?
This is the This is the Wood Whisperer, as I recall.
Yeah, right? that's what I call myself.
Hey, thanks for calling in.
Hey, no problem. I heard you guys were having the 100th episode, which is a huge number in the world of podcasts. You guys are like old men now.
That's right. Yeah, in the world of podcasting, we are aged veterans.
Yeah, so. I mean, 100 seriously for a good quality podcast that's not, you know, you guys aren't being paid by some big company to do it. That is impressive. Congratulations.
Thank you. Except that it's probably only about our 40th quality podcast out of 100, but
I don't know about that. We started out with the goal of having quality and here we are. So.
Yeah, well, they say you got to knock when you start podcasting, you got to at least knock out the first 10 or 20 and pretend they never happened.
Exactly.
Because they're never that good.
Yeah. You know, we still get a lot of plays on those shows though. Some of those early ones.
You know what, though? People, I find with audiences, they're just not as picky as we are. And if you're putting out decent information, if your delivery isn't perfect, who cares? They really like it. So you got to keep the stuff up there.
Hopefully I think we're keeping it out there and people are finding us and hopefully learning a little bit about some of the things they can do in their home and how to fix things and that sort of stuff. So now, Mark, are you a handyman in your house or do you just do woodworking?
Well, I don't know if you can be a woodworker without being a handyman.
That's a good point.
It's like, to me, the ultimate handyman hobby, I suppose.
Yes.
You know, we've got a ton of tools in our garages and our basements as woodworkers. And, you know, the one thing I will say is that woodworkers may not make the best handymen. Just like I always thought of myself being, if I was ever on a job site, I would be fired in a second because, like, you know, building a house, I would be making sure that my studs were all jointed and right. straight, and I would not be a good candidate for building
right.
a home.
Well,
you know, it just would take me way too long.
And I imagine, as a you know, as the media mogul that you are on the internet, do you even have time to fix things in your house? You know.
Yeah, fortunately, I do. Okay. We're just regular people, and I have a hard time paying anybody for something that I know I can accomplish myself.
Well, that's good. So tell us, what's the biggest, what is one of, maybe not the biggest, but what's one of the bigger things you've done around the house, DIY type things, apart from woodworking itself?
Well, a couple different things. We just recently moved into a new house, and fortunately, there's not a whole lot to do here. Really, the absolute pinnacle of my existence was being able to get up into a crawl space in our attic, which I've never had one before.
Uh-huh.
And as someone who, you know, is, you know, very into electronics and whole house audio, and I was able to run Cat 5 everywhere.
Oh,
and
cool.
I think in the last there show you guys, or a recent show, you guys were talking about running
yes.
a home network.
And we're going
to,
yep.
Man, oh, just it was so great just being able to find the location. And,
yep.
you know, sometimes it was a little hard to fish it down. But
right.
compared to what I had done in my previous home to try to get wiring in different places, it was an absolute dream. So I would say that was the height of my DIY stuff in this house. But in our previous house, we had a relatively unfinished basement. And I basically threw up a couple walls and put together my own home theater.
Cool.
Front projection home theater.
Nice. Well, why don't we properly introduce you? Mark
okay.
is the Wood Whisperer, and you can find him at thewoodwhisperer.com, correct?
Correct.
And off the top of my head. And you've been doing video podcasts, video casts, whatever you want to call it, of your woodworking and teaching woodworking. And both Brian and I have both benefited from that. In fact, we've referred our listeners to some of your shows because we realize there's no point in trying to explain something you've already done such a good job of. So how long have you been doing that?
That is about 3.5 years now.
Okay.
So it was around Thanksgiving, November-ish of 2006 was when we officially started.
Cool. And, you know, you may not notice, but Brian and I both discovered your video cast before we even started podcasting. And
oh,
we're,
yes.
Yeah, we were sharing it, you know, enjoying it. And we kind of developed the idea of a podcast apart from it. We weren't even thinking of your stuff because it was so different.
Sure.
And, you know, your idea was to do some video and woodworking. And we were thinking of something completely different, a website of handy guy ideas. And then we fell into the idea of a podcast. And then we realized we were both doing something similar to what you were doing. But mm-hmm. it was something we had discovered early on because for woodworkers, we're both woodworkers, Brian more so than myself. Mm-hmm. It's really nice. You kind of have to have video to be able to do any
teaching in that. Yeah. I mean, we do an audio show and it's
right.
really more about like what's going on in the industry, any, you know, deals that we found and just really kind of goofing off and having a
sure.
good time. You got to be a hardcore woodworking fan
right.
to listen to it in audio format. But you're right. It's got to be,
right.
absolutely has to be video for anyone to really get anything, you know, really productive out of it.
I mean, the one area of woodworking I've always struggled with, and a lot of woodworkers are the same, is the finishing work and with the stains
yeah.
and all that. And I've really appreciated some of your videos there on how to get, you know, the proper spit coat and get everything prepared. And
sure. Sure.
So that.
Well,
that's,
you just very nicely set me up for a nice plug for.
Go for it.
for my DVD.
Cool.
I don't really have many DVDs of topics that aren't already something that they can get for free on the website. And the one thing that I wanted to do when I thought about what should I do as a DVD, I decided that finishing was the one thing
yeah.
that vexes, you know, most woodworkers, that
right.
they just can't get it down. And it's just a lot easier than a lot of publications might lead you to believe. So I decided I would take you know, an hour or two, I'd put it on a DVD and I would talk about one simple finish that will work for just about every piece of furniture. And you can go off on different tangents and learn different things, but
right.
this one particular thing will work every time.
And what's the secret? What's that one particular thing, or do I have to buy the DVD?
You have to buy the DVD. I'm going to do it.
Well, the truth is, if you watch every video from beginning to end, I mean, we've got like 120 of them, you probably will get all that, all those tips and all that information, but it's all kind of sporadically pushed throughout from one project to another. But really, it is just using a wiping varnish.
Right.
So it's a matter of getting rid of the brush. You know, brushes lead to drips and a lot of streaks and things like that. And it takes a little bit of a learning curve to get that down. But wiping a varnish finish or a polyurethane finish onto a surface is a lot more forgiving, and you get a lot more control and a much nicer finish. But
and do you have a separate finishing room like Norm Abrams?
No, I'm not that lucky. Not that lucky. I wish I did. My finishing room now is also known as my driveway.
Right. And, well, in Arizona, that is a finishing room. You can go outside,
pretty much. So I just roll everything out into the driveway, and I'll even spray out there.
But, you might see some rain in October or something like that.
Right? yeah. These days, I stick to, if I can, mostly water-based finishes just to kind of be more environmentally responsible when I can be.
Now, you know, it's interesting. We kind of diverged into finishing. We had a question recently on our call-in line. Someone wanted to know, they had raw bamboo countertops installed in their kitchen.
Wow.
And they wanted to know what kind of finish to use on that. They had recommended that Watco.
The Danish oil?
The Danish oil finish is what the installer had recommended. Okay. And she was concerned about, you know, it being oil-based and solvent and this and that. And the installer had said, well, you could just use a water-based polyurethane. Mm-hmm. And my thought was that, you know what, that's probably not such a good idea because that's a hard maintenance finish. You start, you know, cutting it or whatever like that, and then you're going to have to strip and refinish it.
Absolutely.
So I had suggested the Watco. Is that how you pronounce it?
Watco. Well, that's how I pronounce it.
Right.
I don't know if it's right or
you've got
wrong,
that General Fishes has what, that salad bowl finish kind of thing?
Yep, they do.
Or Waterlocks.
Right.
You know, something like that.
Family. Sure.
Right. So, and then I also told her to check out some of your finishing videos. So she never got back to us, but, you know.
Well, things like countertops are always tricky because the question is, are they going to cut on the surface? Because if they're not, then you may as well just finish it with something that's really durable, you know, something like just a straight polyurethane, or Balin's makes a product called Rock Hard Tabletop.
Yep. Oh, yeah, sure.
Very high solids urethane mixture or varnish mixture. And it's you know, those things are great for protection from abrasion, from heat. You drop a hot pot on it, and of course water. Now, if they're cutting on the surface, well, now we've got a whole different thing to be concerned about, because cuts in a film finish are of course going to basically crack the finish and give you an opportunity for bacteria, water, everything to seep into those cracks. Eventually, it's either going to be unhealthy or it's going to start to flake. And that goes for water-based finish. That goes for anything that builds a film, and anything that's got you know, a varnish in it is going to build a film. So that's really the follow-up that you would need to know is, are they definitely planning on cutting on it? Because to me personally, even if I had wood of any type as a countertop surface, I'd still be doing my cutting on cutting boards.
Yeah, I think I would be in the same camp as you.
Except I would be concerned that just having a wood surface. You're right. I mean, I guess I would too. But, you know, just having it there just invites somebody to cut on it. You know.
Yeah, because you can.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and there's a couple different schools of thought. Now, bamboo, you know, it's you're still going to have a problem with, like, we do a lot of cutting boards on our website. In fact, our most popular, most watched video is the one on how to make an end grain cutting board. And I have what has been sort of a controversial, somewhat controversial finishing method for that, because I do finish my end grain cutting boards with a varnish.
You use a varnish and you, what, dilute it and soak it in? And I remember watching that video. Yeah,
exactly. So by diluting it, I'm letting the end grain, which is really like a collection of straws, if you think of it that way, and the varnish just gets sucked right up inside. And I'm not really putting so much that I'm building a film. I'm just kind of stopping it from allowing water and any moisture to ever penetrate it.
Down into the straws,
so you can still cut on it. Yeah, and you could easily refresh it. And, you know, so again, it just really depends on what the person is going to do with it. but that countertop that she has is definitely not end grain. So it's not, you know, right. if she's gonna mangle that thing, she better put something on there that she can, number one, refresh and sanitize, and, you know, something that's not going to lead to cuts and bacteria.
Yeah.
So, Mark, tell us what's new for you for the coming year. I know we've referred some of our listeners over to your website, especially when they ask us specific issues involving woodworking. Tell us what you're doing and what maybe if you have anything new for 2010.
Yeah, you know, we kind of fly by the seat of our pants all the time. you know, I usually don't know what's going on more than a month ahead of time, but the biggest thing
month?
That we've done.
I mean, we don't know an hour before our show sometimes
isn't
what
that
we're
the
doing.
Joy of podcasting, right? Right? Yeah, the biggest thing that we have going on this year is probably our guild. It's actually been a year old at this point. Yep, going into year two, the guild is essentially kind of like a local woodworking guild, except for we're a web-based woodworking guild. And the idea is for a bunch of people to get together and share their ideas on woodworking and do projects together. And in fact, in March, we're having our first, what's really sort of being deemed our first big guild build, as we're calling it. Okay. We're going to make a really nice shaker end table, just a very classic, simple project, well, relatively simple project. And it's one of those things to get the fence sitters off of the fence, to get them into the shop and actually building something with these tools that they purchased.
Okay.
So we probably will be leading into more stuff like that, more community-based, everybody getting together and building these things together.
Okay.
That's probably where we're headed. And I would also like to mention right now, this is a pretty good cause. There's one of our guild members, not to bring the show down, but his name is Dwayne Moore, and he's unfortunately battling pancreatic cancer right now, and things are not going well. And we had the opportunity to go out there and help him get a head start on his March project. And every person in the guild that builds one of these tables and sends me a picture of the finished product, I'm going to be donating $5 to the American Cancer Society. And fortunately, a lot of our sponsors and companies that we work with have also opted to match that. And then on top of that, the community has just dove in. And within a matter of, I think it's been up for 2 days, we've had a donation link up. We've got over $1,000 raised.
Wow.
And this doesn't even count the stuff that's going to be coming after the build in March. Honestly, that's where I would like to go with this. If we've got a big audience and we've got a huge bunch of kind-hearted woodworkers in a nice community, well, let's direct that into something really positive if we can. So
for the handy guy who's also a woodworker, how does one join the guild?
The guild is something, well, it is a paid membership. I should say that ahead of time. Uh-huh. And it's not cheap, but if you compare the cost of buying a couple woodworking DVDs or a woodworking class, it's way cheaper than that. So, but what you get for that is a bunch of extra videos, the same type of content that you get for free on thewoodwhisperer.com. You just get more of it. We do live interactive interviews. In fact, on Wednesday, we have an interview with Michael Dresner, who's a renowned finishing expert. We've had David Marks from the Woodworks show on DIY, and we've got just a bunch of great people. Roy Underhill, have you guys seen him on PBS?
Yes.
He does like the all hand tool guy.
Yeah, right. Like the colonial woodworking.
They don't
kind
have
of
him on around here as much as they used to. I don't know if he's still on. Maybe
yeah,
he is,
we don't get him either. It's very limited, I guess.
Yeah.
But
cool.
But either way, names like that, we try to get in for live interviews. And all they have to do is go to, what is it? thewoodwhisperer.com/TWW. You know what? We actually... I'm saying this and going, you know what? I know we did something to make it easier for people. It's at woodwhisperguild.com.
Okay.
That'll take them where they need to go.
Okay.
Cool.
Well, we'll get a link up on our show notes for that.
Cool. I appreciate it.
Sure.
All right.
So you guys, at episode 100, I'm curious what you guys have planned. Now, I've heard the whole video thing might be coming up. What's that about?
We've done some videos here in the past couple years, off and on. We're going to be including more video. We like to get a little more interaction, like you're suggesting that you're doing with the woodworkers. And really get it into the nuts and bolts of specific projects. So if we get questions from our listeners, which you've kindly submitted at least one that I know of over the last year or so, sometimes we'll respond with a video as opposed to just audio. So, might be kind of interesting. You know, we were talking earlier about networking in our last show. We talked about running Cat 5 throughout your house, and we will do some video, not necessarily the whole run, but we'll give you some tips on, some ways to fish Category 5. I've done a ton of that in my life, and so has Brian.
Yeah, sure.
Both professionally and personally. So, you know, we'll do some things, and obviously a lot of those projects can, you know, are easier explained with video than just audio. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yep. So, you know, we're going to probably have twofold. We'll have our normal podcast available in a video format. Enhanced, we'll have some of the pictures and little video clips like we do in the show notes with the audio podcast, but that'll all be interspersed in the video. But then we'll have occasional, you know, 2 to 5 minute how-to videos. You know, we've already done those in the past, you know, sure. Fixing a toilet, fixing a dishwasher, how to lay down a decent bead of caulk, you know, whatever, different things like that. And so we'll intersperse those along with our regular show.
What we hope to do, I mean, you know, you have YouTube, so it seems like sure. anymore you're finding that you can ask almost any question and see somebody do it. So we hope to add some value in that we'll be answering your specific question and a little bit better quality of video, we hope, than what you often find on YouTube. It's been so compressed. You know, you can't even see what's that blurry thing they're trying to show you? So
absolutely. We'll that's one thing that I think has worked in our favor is the fact that we're sticklers for quality. And if, you know, within reason, we don't have a bunch of studio lights and stuff in the shop. That just, I did try that for a time, but that wasn't very successful. But you know, having a good quality video that, it's on the internet. It's going to be, you know, basically encoded, you know, like to the point that it's just grainy. So the better source material you start with, you know, the better product you end up with at the end. And you could still get some decent video quality up there. But I would love to see that stuff just for little things. Like you said, just caulking.
Right.
I had some issues in my garage recently that I had to do when I was looking online for videos and I couldn't find anything good. So, I mean, stuff like that is just invaluable.
Yeah. When we started out in the audio podcasting, you know, one of our initial goals was to do a decent quality. You know, we wanted to have decent sound quality. We made an investment in decent sound gear at the time, and we've upgraded over the past 100 episodes. And so when we said we want to do video, we said, let's go right to a better quality. You know, all these little teeny, you know, 2-inch videos that are being, you know, cranked out all the time from some of the big producers, the quality is horrible. And we wanted to kind of try to leapfrog that if we could, even if we were very...
Although it's easier said than done. But
yeah.
It can be, yeah.
So maybe we're not going to have the quantity. We're certainly not going to have the quantity like some of these large TV networks that are pushing out their content.
Sure.
But we're going to have the quality, and it's going to be very specific to what our listeners are looking for.
And you're going to have the heart and soul. You know, I mean, that's a huge factor is to see that you guys are just like us. People want to see people like themselves doing these things successfully. And I think that's what you guys bring to the table as opposed to the, you know, the really well-polished person coming up in the polo shirt, you know, showing them how to do something
exactly.
In a very unrealistic situation.
Right. Because a lot of those folks are, you know, they're actors.
Right. I was going to say their biggest accomplishment is graduating from acting school, not changing a light bulb. You know?
Right.
Exactly. And you guys being in a real home, I mean, the best thing you could do is work on your own houses or your own yards or whatever you're showing. And if you make a mistake, I mean, just show people. I've gotten so much credit because I've shown people my screw ups. and in fact, it's funny. Whenever it happens, I kind of look forward to it happening because the fix becomes the most memorable thing about that particular video.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I've concealed a lot of woodworking. You know, I don't do a whole lot of woodworking, but, you know, I try to get a couple projects out a year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you spend the most time fixing mistakes. You know, that's the operation that takes the most amount of time sometimes.
Yeah. Caulk and paint.
The mark of a quality woodworker is not necessarily how few mistakes you make. It's just how well you can cover the one.
Right. You know, in light construction, they say a little caulk, a little paint makes a carpenter what he ain't.
There you go.
So, yeah, exactly.
I forget what we say, paint to match and hammer to fit or something like that.
Yeah.
A lot of little phrases out there.
Yeah, or if it...
Or I measure once, cut twice, but anyway.
There you go. Most of us do that.
Sure. Yeah, that applies in a lot of different things. Or, if you can't fix it, you only need a bigger hammer, right?
Is that the other thing? That's it.
So... Yeah, it's all good. Well, Mark, we really appreciate you calling in.
Yes, thank you so much. And we wish that you would have continued success, because guys like you that are doing, you know, podcasting, video casting full time is and being successful is only good for the stragglers like us, the guys that have smaller. but seriously, though, we really appreciate it. And we'd like to, we've appreciated your work as, I guess, as folks that are, do some woodworking and are looking for our own answers to our own questions. And certainly, you have a great website, and we always refer our listeners to it whenever we can. So,
well, thank you, guys, and it was an incredible honor to be here on your 100th episode, and I wish you 100 more, and I can't wait to see this video stuff come out.
Cool. Well, we appreciate you coming in, and or calling in, I should say, Skyping in, as they say, and maybe we'll have you on again sometime.
I would love to. Thanks a lot, guys.
And maybe we'll get you out in the garage where we can show you our table saws and our...
Hey, there you go. We could do a special tool tune-up.
Yeah, episode. There we go. Mine needs to be tuned up and maybe some rust removed as well from...
We can do that.
Snow blown in my garage this winter. Cool. Well, that was awesome that we could have Mark call in. And we also got the chance to talk about some of our favorite episodes. Now, we'd like our listeners. We should have our listeners vote for their favorite episodes. Maybe we can do that.
Can we? You want to put a poll up on the website?
No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to know it.
No.
They actually do vote. They listen, you know.
That's right. And we know, you know, how many people play the episode in iTunes or download it or play it on the web or
what are some, you know, of the ones? You know, there have been some real popular, like, for instance, the Roger German. We haven't even talked about that. One of our first interview shows, it was great. Unfortunately, his cell phone, the quality of the call wasn't that great, but certainly the content was awesome to have Roger on, who's written the essential book on basement finishing. And we've gotten a lot of listens on that. Also, especially episode 2 for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know why people jumped to number, you know, part 2 of the interview versus part 1.
Maybe something about because of the content that we have in there, insulation and things like that get people's attention. So that's a big one. What are some of the other?
The trellis.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You threw this idea that you were going to build a trellis and we'd podcast about it. And I said, that's crazy, because how do you podcast about building a trellis? But the key was you put the instructions out there. And that's,
right, in a PDF, and people can download it. And, you know, so that got distributed around the web. And, you know, you know, for real woodworking projects, you know, go over to Wood Whisperer and talk to Mark.
Absolutely.
But, you know, that was a simple one. You need a trellis in your garden, one board from the home center, and a couple of screws and some glue, and you're good to go. You can make a trellis.
Absolutely. So continue voting for our episodes. We'd appreciate it by listening to our podcasts, by downloading them, by listening to them through iTunes, and hopefully soon you'll be able to watch them as well. That's coming up. We're going to have some Handy Guys TV, if you will, and we'll be able to visually show you some of the things that we talk about. And we hope to get your feedback on that. But keep up with the questions. We'll use your content on our podcast. We hope to continue for another 100 episodes, if possible. You think we'll make it another 100?
It depends what the sponsors say, right?
Yeah, right. All right. Well, thanks for listening. We thank you for these past 100 shows. And we'll be back next week on the Handy Guys Podcast.
Thanks. Bye.
The Handy Guys will be back next week. Same handy time, same handy website.